PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week with a very interesting product is Mr. Ralph Bauer. He is the head, I suppose you would say the owner of Tour Read, which is a very interesting putter app. Ralph, it is great to have you on.
Dan, thanks for having me on, buddy.
So we have a little bit of a local connection. You're an Ontario guy, which is really cool. Let's give the audience a little bit of depth on where you've come from and your story in golf. So it sounds like you've been a teaching professional for quite some time.
Yeah. So I was lucky enough to, play Division I college golf and did all that. So basically I've spent my entire adult life trying to get either myself better or, you know, once I shifted away from playing into coaching to getting everyone else better. So, you know, I played college golf. I was lucky enough to play with Mickelson, Furyk, kind of all the best players of my generation. And it was always curious to play with guys who didn't make it as well, right? So, and then see the difference between, hey, why did some people make it and some people didn't? And kind of key differentiators, you know, on that, right? And, you know, transitioned. I feel like if I was just a little bit better golfer, I would have ruined my life chasing it. But I was, just bad enough to realize, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go a different route here. You know, my generation, we didn't have great coaches. There wasn't a lot of great coaches out there. I was fortunate enough to work with a few of them. But, you know, I kind of got into coaching to try to be the kind of coach that I felt like I never really had. And, you know, it's been fun to see people develop. And I think the last time I checked, my students on the PGA Tour have won about $350 million. So, you know, that's kind of a nice little, you know, that's been fun to work with. But I'm a director of instruction at a club as well. And, you know, I just like helping people enjoy their golf and, you know, and play better. And, you know, somebody asked me the other day, I was fortunate enough to play Lake Nona on Saturday. And so he said, do you really like golf? And I thought about it, like one, I like playing well.
Right? Yeah, so, sure.
I feel like that's the case for a lot of us, right? You know, and I'm joking a little bit because it's always nice to get outdoors and play golf. But I think the reason we come back is for those few shots that we, you know, that we're super proud of.
Yeah, the ones that matter, right? The ones that bring you back. You always play your worst on one and your best on the last shot on 18, right? Just enough to get you back out the next weekend. It's a cruel game, but I think we all love the realities of that. So a teaching career, you obviously had a chance to see a lot of the trends that exist in amateur golfers as well as highly skilled golfers. Do you feel like you learned a lot about the challenges of golf going through that and seeing where people really thrive or fail?
I feel like I've coached on the PGA Tour now since full-time since 2009, and coaching the best players in the world is an amazing experience for a coach to sharpen their skills. So, and I always feel like, hey, you know what, if it can make the 40th best player in the world better, it's probably going to help a 20 handicap or two, right? And so it's fun to teach the best players in the world. You know, we had access to the best trainers, the best caddies, the best sports psychs, the best everything. So it just, I love learning. I think it's super important to, you know, to keep growing and, you know, to stay on top of those trends. And some trends, just because it's a trend doesn't mean it's a good idea, right? Like, you know, I always, if I see something new that I think is amazing, I always have a cooling off period where I think about it for a bit. I'm not one of those guys who like, hey, it's trendy, super trendy to do this. Let's get all my players doing that. That's just kind of how I feel. I feel like it's important to keep learning, but you have to be patient with what we're learning.
Yeah. I have a good laugh. Not that I would ever do this to anyone, but it seems like there's always that one guy in the range who's found something on the internet that works well for him. So the next 20 people he talks to about fixing their swing goes straight to that idea. Yeah. It's a funny thing.
It's a funny thing too. And I feel like some coaches will kind of maybe identify issues in their game. And then they're looking to implement that in the people that are in front of them. And, you know, the PGA Tour, they're not going to officially change their name to the Copycat Tour, but it kind of is.
Interesting. The nice thing about what we'll speak about today is I think there's a level of refinement that exists in the short game that is a lot more achievable than the full swing. The perspective that people have is you want to get better quickly with your scores. You spend time around the practice green, which of course no one does when they practice. But the ability to refine a putting game, in my perspective, I feel like it's a little less challenging than trying to hit that big bomb off the tee or drop a wedge to within, you know, X number of feet. What's your take on that?
The easiest way to lower your scores is to read greens better, right? So I found the hardest skill to acquire statistically is putting, and the putting stroke is not that complicated. And I feel like the reason that it's such a hard skill to acquire is because we haven't had a great system on how to train our green reading. So that's kind of what I've focused my time on. And I found, you know, from beginners to tour players, if we can read greens better, if we can accurately predict the break, you know, while we're playing, we're gonna, our speed will improve, right? Our alignment will improve, like everything kind of flows, I feel like, through that. So, you know, we all like to hit great drives, don't get me wrong, right? Like, you know, I had a kind of nice round of golf last, you know, on Saturday, and you know, I definitely remember some of the iron shots I hit, right? And some of the drives. But in terms of actually just lowering your score, if we practice our green reading a little bit, we would get much, much better.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly interesting. And I think what surprised me about tour read is it takes a conversation that's not had enough and really puts it at the forefront. And what I mean by that is, I'm a part of a community who endlessly talks about the right fit and endlessly talks about the product that works best for your game. But I feel like the actual application of those things kind of gets lost in the mix. We talk a lot about, hey, if you're straight back, straight through, you don't want a lot of toe hang on your putter. You talk about certain weights or styles or whatever it may be, but I've personally seen this, and I'm absolutely guilty of it. When I have a putter that works a certain way, I'll find ways to make it work. But in most cases, when you stand behind me and you tell me what I'm doing, my eyes have been so trained that I'm not really doing what I think I am. And I think a lot of that falls into the ability to work away from design to find ways to make putts, whereas I'm not really refining that, like, am I reading it correctly? I'm creating that balance between the two. So what I want to do is really dig into this app that you've created. But I think the best way to get started is to talk about the inception of it. How did it come about? Is it something you sat at home drinking coffee thinking about, or where did it come from?
So, you know, I've coached on the PGA Tour for quite a while, and I found that the big thing that helps players that I worked with, the players I coached on the tour before I created the app, I'm a stat guy. I love numbers. I would track their strokes gained before I started working with them, and then I would compare that to the time frame that I worked with them, just to see. I know there's a lot of variables in there, but just to see what type of effect I was having on the player. So the average tour player I coached would pick up 0.6 shots a day with their putting, which is, you know, quite a bit. So I feel like a big part of that was attributed to, I would give them feedback on their start line control. So basically what would happen is we'd pick a breaking putt you know, let's say, are you a righty, Dan? I apologize. I
think yes. Yeah.
So righty. So you'd have a big right to left putt. You would miss it low. You would, every player I've ever worked with would automatically default to, oh, I pulled it. So if I, you know, so now, then they're trying to fix something that's not even broken. So if I could give you feedback and say, actually, you didn't pull it. We didn't play enough break. And then we'd add some more break. I'm like, see, there you go. Now go. Now they're going in. And that way you're not chasing, you know, going down a rabbit hole of mechanics when mechanics aren't the problem. So what happened was I tested PGA Tour players on right to left putts, and they only recognized 85% of the break, right? So if it broke 20 inches, they'd say it broke 17 inches, right? So they're off by 3 inches. They're going to miss that putt, and they're going to think they pulled it. The really bad news on left righters, they're even worse. They would, on that 20 inch break, they would only recognize 14 inches. So now hopefully they learned over the years to pull their putts, right? And to compensate for their poor green reading by having a bad stroke. But I always tell people, like, boy, it's a tough way to go to bed at night thinking, geez, I hope my misreads and my bad stroke cancel out tomorrow and I make a bunch of putts.
Well, but, I mean, you just spoke into existence the scariest putting golfer, right-handed golfer, which is the slightly downhill left to right breaker. It's terrifying.
Yeah. So what happened is I was given a golf lesson to, you know, I don't want to pigeonhole people, but, you know, you can learn a lot from people on what their, you know, what their profession is and how they approach things. So I gave a lesson to a member at my club, and he was, I knew him. I knew he's an engineer. It's like, okay, well, he's an engineer. I'm going to get pretty technical with him here. Right. So, you know, I had putting charts out and, you know, have my whole, do my whole thing. It's Ralph, this can't be that easy. I'm like, yeah, that's all there is to it. It's just physics. Right. And he's like, boy, we should turn this into an app. Right. And so, you know, we spent maybe 6 months doing that, you know, another 6 months on the hardest part was once I tested it, the first time I tested it, I paddled out in the putting green, you know, with a roller, and I had 25 putts that I used the app to see how much they were in a break, and 24 of them went in. And I'm like looking around going, oh my gosh, this is like a magic show. This so then we had to wait to get it patented. And then what I had a few people I wanted to test it with. So I tested with two tour players, a junior boy and a junior girl. Statistically speaking, the one tour player last year had the best short game on the PGA Tour. The other one went on to have won 3 times since then on the PGA Tour. You know, not bad. And the junior girl won the Canadian Women's Amateur that year. She was, you know, maybe ranked 40th, 50th in the world or in Canada before that. And the boy, you know, played very, very well, was second-ranked, you know, junior and got a nice scholarship to a school. So it's pretty fun to see people improve dramatically with better green reading. And even funner than that, it's fun to see people lose their frustration with putting by knowing what they need to work on. And I made a joke earlier about, you know, nobody wants to go practice their putting. And I feel that's true. And I think that's because they just don't know what to do. You know, if I could say, hey, if you hit 10 putts with our app before every round, you're going to average 2 shots less per day. It's 10 putts. You know, then I can talk people into doing it, right? If I say, hey, you need to practice for some pie in the sky thing that may or may not happen, you know, people aren't going to do it, right? So, yeah, it's been super fun to see people, you know, make more putts.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've heard in the past is that people don't like to practice their putting because they feel like they get outside of their rhythm or their style. And maybe what that says to me is that they're doing enough wrong to get it right. And if you start to manipulate that through hours of practice, it may seem like you're out of your own rhythm, but in reality, you're sort of getting better unintentionally, but you don't know how you're doing it. So do you think there's a bit of that to it? Because there is a realm of putting that does require square face, correct line. But there also is the element of, you know, people get it wrong but get it right. They putt it wrong, but get it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if somebody's good at something, they should keep doing it.
Mm.
So if you've, and there's been lots of examples in golf over the years of that somebody's got a quirky move, right? And it works for them. They should definitely keep doing it. Most people, if they didn't know Scottie Scheffler and he showed up, you know, for a golf lesson, the first thing they're going to work on is his footwork, right? So, yeah, I think that'd be a bad move as a golf coach, right, to change Scottie Scheffler's footwork. But, you know, we didn't, if you don't know him, that's probably what we do. So if something works, you should absolutely stick with it. Now, I've found misreading putts and hoping to compensate with a poor stroke, there's really no pathway there for it to improve, right? It may work on a few putts. It may work for a day, might work for a few days. You might lead you into a slump that you never get out of. I mean, it's just hard to see a pathway for improvement. I think the big three things to me are alignment, right? Alignment, super important, green reading, and then hitting it solid, right? So, you know, you look at Tiger's drill where he put the famous drill where he put the two tees on either side of the putter, right? That's an oldie but a goldie. I was coaching this week at Bay Hill, and I think two of the four guys I worked with, we did that drill with. It's you know, if it works for Tiger, he was pretty good. It's going to help us. And we've all seen that picture of the, you know, Tiger's putter face where that sweet spot was wore out. And I think he's wearing out that sweet spot because he's not manipulating it. He's reading the putt correctly. He's lining up correctly. He's hitting it solid. He's going to hit good putt after good putt.
Hmm.
So to me, those are the big three. And I feel like a lot of instruction, a lot of practice doesn't revolve around those three. And those are the three things that really move the needle.
Okay. Well, let's break down the app in total. I believe, to my understanding, the majority of the focus on it is reading and understanding the slope of the green, I think in like a 60 to 80% distance from the putt, the ball to the hole. And then it suggests a certain amount of break that will exist, so the amount you should aim away from the hole.
Yeah, so our phones are scary, right? I mean, let's face it, they're scary, right? So what you do is you put the phone down between the ball and the hole. It measures the slope of the ground and very, very accurately predicts how much a putt's going to break. For a lot of people, this is a real eye-opener. You know, they're like, wow, like I had no idea that putt was going to break that much. And it's a great way to get them to wrap their head around how much putts actually break, right? So now I tested the app against 10 PGA Tour players, and you know the app was undefeated. It was a 10-0. I mean, machines are more accurate than humans, and you know that's kind of the first step is putting the phone down, letting the level of the phone measure the ground. You can take two reads if you want to get a little bit more accurate. Two data points are better than one. Hit the average button. And that's going to give you a very, very accurate read that you can, you know, very confidently hit your putt. And that's going to go in the hole. So that's going to be a great way to practice our visuals on how much putts break. And also what percent of slopes, you know, we're kind of dealing with, which is a whole other ball game. I'm happy to dive into that if you have time for that.
But tons of time. Yeah. Let's go for it.
So, you know, and it's pretty controversial right now about, you know, guys, you know, walking on the green, you know, and, you know, I've worked with Lucas before and Lucas had a good, you know, he calls it stomping on the green. Right. but anyway, so I did a study on 100 players, which is a pretty big number, on how they can best perceive the slope. Right. So is it best perceived by, you know, standing over top of the line, or is it best perceived by treating it like a triangle and going to the low point and looking uphill? 90% of the people were better able to perceive the slope from a low point looking uphill rather than from over top of it, right? So 90% is a pretty big number. You know, there is 10% that do like the that I found we're pretty good at straddling it. But I mean, if you're not going to test yourself 90%, I would just go with that. So I'll throw a tour player out here. I had a tour player last year who was straddling the line before every putt. He was losing 0.7 shots around. We tested him after the season. He was much, much better going to low point, looking uphill. Also, he could look at the putt more holistically from there. And now he's fourth strokes gained total. And, you know, part of that's putting where he's picking up a half shot a day. So, you know, and his strokes stayed the same. His strokes no different. He's perceiving the line better, which is super important. So basically how we do it, you know, I want people to play better on the golf course, right? Nobody comes to me and says, "Hey, Ralph, I'm not hitting the ball great on the range. I need to fix that." You know, they say, "Hey, I'm slicing it on, you know, I can't get over the creek on three," or, you know, whatever their issues are. So we've got like a 3-step process. First step, just put the phone down. You know, it'll tell you the percent of slope left to right, right to left, and up and down. And I get a lot of people like going, "Oh my gosh, I have no idea what and now I have to learn all these slopes." And I think we should look at it take it back to our daily life. And I'm going to pick on you here for a sec. Dan, do you have a patio at your house?
I do, yep.
Okay, so typically patios are going to be on about a 2% slope. If your patio was installed at a 0% slope, there'd be water damage because the rain wouldn't run off it, and that'd be a real problem. However, if they put a 3% slope on, you know, it makes sitting at your picnic table uncomfortable because it'd be too much of a slope. So that's probably a 2% slope. You know, if we walked on a sidewalk, that's again about a 2% slope. I was talking to Joel Damon last week, and he's like, "Ralph, we're still struggling a little bit learning the percent of slopes." I'm like, "All you got to really know is at 2%. Because if you know what 2% is, then you know one's a little bit less than that. You know, three is a little bit more than that."
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you have to memorize a whole bunch of, and he's like, "Well, that's a good way of looking at it." We, you know, I brought up, this is a bit of a sore subject with Joel, but I brought up his patio, and he's like, "Well, our patio is actually messed up, and it's like, it's too tilted." I'm like, "Okay, well, sorry about that." But, you know, and then we've got an on-course system, right, that's going to help us play better golf, you know, when we're out there playing golf. And I dropped Joel's name, so I'll roll with that. I don't know if you remember this, Dan, but he had he kind of barely kept his card last year, right? It came right down the last hole, and he had a 6-foot putt, you know, and he needed to make it to keep his card. I don't know if you remember that. And
Joel, yeah, it was a big story. Yeah,
it was a big story. And Joel's a great guy, you know, and he's a friend of mine. So, you know, I was happy to see him, you know, make that putt. And his coach texted me afterwards. He goes, "Hey, he used your system. You know, he did the math. He came up with 8 inches of break from the center of the hole, which is a lot, right? He trusted it, hit a good putt, knocked it in, right?" So, and Joel's a good example. Like, you know, again, when I was talking to him this week, he's like, it was actually last week, sorry. He said, "You know, just going through the system, it gives me so much more confidence in having an actual target instead of being vague, right?" And, you know, I hear a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, it's feel and just see it," and things like that. And, you know, no other part of the game do we do that. I mean, everybody's got rangefinders, right? Everybody, or if they don't have a rangefinder, they've got a thing on their watch, or they're at least going to know the number. Like, Dan, would you imagine playing? Could you imagine yourself going out to play around a golf and going, "You know, I'm just going to eyeball every shot from the fairway"?
Well, I'll tell you what, Ralph, I can't imagine that because I forgot my rangefinder. We're in winter mode, right? So all good stuff stays inside while everything else gets cold in the trunk. But yeah, I played a couple of times, and there's a feeling of you feel like at a loss, almost like without, you know. But I want to reference that back because you mentioned a lot of this these 2-degree slope. And I'm not a proponent at all of what you call the straddling technique. I think it's weird to think that we can stand back and forth and find the correct slope. For me, it's a visual thing. I get to a low point, I try and visualize it. And I want to reference that back to the app from a sort of validation perspective. I think eye training is a big deal. You talked about the rangefinder. I don't go out there with confidence with that one, but I have a pretty good idea where I am, generally speaking. And when I get that confidence by clicking the rangefinder, it confirms my suspicion that I have a fairly good idea what a 100-yard shot, 150-yard shot looks like. How much of your app, now that you have this percentage of slope, do the guys put it down, then go to the low point and get that perceived version of, okay, that's what 2 degrees looks like?
There's two things here. One is knowing, being able to perceive the slope.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way around that. We need to be able to perceive the slope, right? We need to say, hey, that's uphill, that's downhill. That's right to left, that's left to right. And the second one is once we know the slope, is being able to accurately predict its, how much that's going to affect our putt, right? The great thing about tour read is with practice, you get very, very good very quickly at being able to perceive the slope. And our system is not subjective at all. It's just a, it's just a simple math equation. You know, you have to know your two times tables. Most people are pretty good at that. That's you're like, oh my gosh, math. Do you know what two times four is? Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well then you're good.
Right? Yeah.
And then I feel too like we want to take the subjectivity out of it a bit. And nobody I've ever worked with didn't think it was an advantage to know the exact break. Right. And, so we need to be able to perceive the slope, and then we need to be able to actually predict the effect that slope's going to have on our putt. And, it's not that complicated, and people can get very good at it very, very quickly.
Well, let me ask some of the variable questions. It's my understanding it's fairly easy to input the distance of the putt. There are things that are sort of out of our control on the green, like green speed or something like playing on Bermuda or a different type of grass where there's a little bit more of an impact. Do you have things that would adjust for those?
Yeah. So basically what you do is you put the phone down between the ball and the hole. You want to put the phone down 2/3 of the way between the ball and the hole. So it's closer to the hole because, if there is some variability in the break, which there always is, it's more important as the putt starts to slow down, right? We've all unfortunately sculled a ball over a green, watched it, race across the green going very fast. The ball doesn't break at all. So the third of the putt doesn't break as much. So we want to pay more attention to the last third of the putt. And so that's important. That's obviously important. The length of the putt is important. If we've got a 1% putt from 9 feet or from 18 feet across the same slope, the 18 footer is going to break twice as much as the 9 footer. So the length is important, and then green speed is important. Faster greens break more, right? You have a slower initial ball speed. The ball takes longer to roll out. Gravity has more time to take effect. It's going to break more. Conversely, slower greens are going to break less. Our system basically defaults to a 10 stimp, which is pretty common. And without giving away all of our secrets, it's pretty easy to determine. Every percent or every stimp is going to break 10% more. So if you've got if you're used to a 10 stimp and all of a sudden you turn up at the club championship and they're 12, rather than fretting about it or being worried, you can say, okay, well, boy, they're two, it went from 10 to 12. Every putt is going to break 20% more today. Right. And which is pretty comforting to know and not having to adjust that. I've had Andrew Putnam who's a, very good tour player. And one of the biggest, I'd say, field players on tour, he's like, Ruff, I just like it because it helps me adjust to green speeds faster. Right. And that's what he told me. And he's like, because it used to take me a couple days every week to get used to green speeds and how much everything's breaking. Now it takes me, 15, 20 minutes. So And most of us don't have two, three days to get ready for a round of golf like tour players do. So if we can get used to the green speeds very, very quickly, you know, it's super helpful. So yeah, Bermuda is another one, which is interesting. You know, I've heard people say, oh, Bermuda doesn't affect break. It absolutely does. Not every tour player plays for it though. Right. Like I had a very, very good tour player this week. It's like, Ralph, I just don't play. I just don't play for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Now that being said, once you've played on tour for 10 years, I feel like some of the things you do instinctively that you might not realize. But nonetheless, what I do, do you know what normalized data is? Like if you set your TrackMan on actual, you know, it's going to tell you how far the ball flew with the wind and everything. If you put it on normalized, it's going to take the wind out of it and just say, hey, yeah, it's windy, but the ball should have flown 150, right? So basically what happens is you put the app down. It doesn't measure the effect the grain has, but all you got to do is go to a 10-footer. If the app says it's going to break 11 inches and it broke 12 inches, well, guess what? Every 10 feet is going to be an inch. So now you got a 30-footer, you're going to play an extra 3 inches.
Gotcha.
By the way, if you don't feel like doing that, that's about how much green affects the average putt.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's hard to manage or deal with that because not all Bermuda is created equal, especially if it's been sanded or cut very short. Yeah. Certainly some more grainy than others. And it terrifies me. I'm a Midwest guy. I don't play it a lot. So, you know, I like the tour guy's idea. I'm just going to pretend like it's not there. That's a good strategy.
Yeah. If you think about it, if it's an inch for every 10 feet, you know, if you ignore it, your putt's still going to go in, right? From 10 feet, 20 feet, you'll miss it. But, you know, most of us from 20 feet, you know, might be off by more than a couple inches anyways. Yeah. Right. So, but if somebody wanted to do it, we've got the only system in the world that's going to give you normalized data, you know, on breaking putts. So that's pretty cool, because if you just try to roll it on, if you just took a roller and rolled a ball on grain, it's going to tell you how much the ball broke, but it wouldn't be able to tell you how much it would have, the difference between normal grass, or shouldn't say normal, apologize to the people who think Bermuda is normal, but you know, it's not going to, our system's going to give you the difference between no grain and grain.
Like okay.
The grain is going to be observable and the no grain is going to be, you know, what we give you. So it's pretty cool to me to be able to quantify that. And it's not like something you have to test every week, because if you're like, let's say, you know, you go to Florida and you're like, okay, well, these greens are, you're on a golf vacation for 4 or 5 days. You hit a couple putts first day. You get to know how much it's going to break, and then you can just roll with that for the rest of the week, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's pretty cool to. It might sound complicated to people, but once people start using it, you know, they get better right away, and it's fun to quantify something, because every other part of our game, if you ask your average, you know, listener of this, what their attack angle should be on their driver, they might have different opinions, but they're going to know what the attack angle should be on their driver. And yet if you say, hey, from 9 feet on a 2% slope, how much should the putt break on a 10 stimp? They're like, I don't know. I just feel it. Right. And I feel like everybody defaulted to that because they didn't have a great system.
Okay.
If I can throw another tour thing out here, actually,
yeah, please.
One thing, because I just found this out yesterday, which I'm pretty pumped about. We don't know who's using our app, right? So it's in the app store. People use it. Sometimes they get back to me. Sometimes they don't. I'd say, well, I knew this part, but 3 of the last 6 U.S. Open men's winners, either them or their coach use our app.
Really?
Pretty cool. Two of them use it every time they play. And the third one, his coach used it in training. So somebody asked me, like, I had a few instructors say, Ralph, this is great, but it's only good for beginners. Like, well, it's great for beginners, you know, or US Open winners, right? So, but that's pretty cool to hear this too, that, you know, we had really our first person using the app win a major last year that I didn't know about, which was pretty cool that you know, had a lady win a major, you know, using the app that I just found out about last night. So, which is pretty cool. But, and I got all excited about that, just telling you that now, and I kind of lost my train of thought. And if you had a question for me,
Actually, I do have a question I want to circle back to. It has to do with the overall design of it. The majority of the benefits of this are calculated based on the sort of internal level that exists in phones, right? You're not just like, you say put the phone down. The whole point is to let the phone decide the slope based on the way it's resting, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing to mention. There's more than just put your phone on the putt. It's an internal process that's kind of going on that determines that.
Yeah. So your phone's got a 3-degree level in it. And so what we did is, you know, we coded that out, right? So we can access that with our app. It's very accurate. You put it on the ground. If you have a camera case that isn't smooth or isn't flat, all you have to do is, before you use the app, it won't let you use it until you calibrate the device. So basically just put it on your kitchen table, hit calibrate, spin it around, and it's looking for what type of case you have, if any. So super simple. It takes, five seconds. And then you'd have to recalibrate your device every time you got a different case. So if you got a different case, you know, you have to spend 5 seconds, you know, recalibrating. So, because I do get a lot of questions about, hey, what about the bump on my camera? That's going to mess it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we thought about that, because otherwise it wouldn't be very good. But the iPhones are incredible. Our Android device should be coming out, I'm thinking within 2 weeks. I was pretty excited. I was at Bay Hill this week, and I saw we've got a bunch of beta testers with the Android, and I saw one of the caddies beta testing it on the green. You know, I went over and compared it to mine, and, you know, it worked great. And, you know, that was kind of fun to, it's always fun to see tour players using it that aren't one of my students, right? So, so you put it down, it gives you very accurate information. I personally always tell people, like, use the hour, like, if you can take two data points, like take a read. If you got a 9-footer, take a read at, you know, halfway there, then 2/3 of the way there, hit the average button. That gets, you know, two data points are better than one. And it kind of eliminates the, you know, if you were in a ball mark, the first, if you put it down to ball mark or something like that. So yeah. No.
How many data points can you add to a single putt? Can you do more than two?
We just did two. I mean, we still have to, we're trying to play better golf and have fun. And we, you know, we don't have that much, you know, time. Like, if more than two seems like overkill to me, if I've never had anybody want to do that, but if you want to take four, then you'd have to do the internal math. You have to take two. It really doesn't change. Once you taking more than two, it doesn't improve the accuracy that much. What really happened is the first read will say 9 inches, second read will say 10.2 inches. So you'll say, okay, then the average, you hit the average feature and it'll say, you know, 9.6, right? Okay. And then if you did another one, it might move up to 9.7, but it's not, you're not moving the needle very much with more than two reads.
Gotcha. I think one of the probably the last real putting component that's out of your hands here is pace. I know there's an encouragement in the app of a percentage of pace. So I assume uphill's more than 100%, downhill's less than 100%. But, you know, what is the end goal of the app suggesting? That you want the ball to roll past it a certain amount, like the inertia would be 12 inches past the hole? What's the standard there?
Yeah, 12 inches.
Okay.
And that's not very controversial either. Like, there's a lot of research on that. I know when Pels first came up with it, it was more like 18, 19 inches. I think it was his first one, but green speeds were a lot slower then. and you know, golf was a lot, just greens were a lot different then. So yes, 12 inches. Pace is obviously super important. The, you know, but knowing the correct line is going to really free us up to then focus on our speed. Right. And, you know, I don't know if you ever saw it. Like, I see so many people that will underread a putt and then instinctively hit it harder, trying to magically hold the line and then have that putt roll by. And they'll tell me, like, Ralph, my speed was bad there. I'm like, going, yeah, speed was obviously bad. You're, you know, 5 feet past, but you underread it and then tried to hammer it. Like, yeah, I just didn't feel like it was quite enough. So I, you know, might have instinctively done that. So speed's super important. The app does give you a kind of a cool thing on percents, kind of like some club caddies do that have that where like, hey, hit this, but it's only going to be a 40%, you know, relative to a straight putt. That, and that's super helpful to, you know, for people just kind of learning how to control their speed. It's not something that feature is not something that the tour players kind of gravitate towards. That's more of the tour players tell me, hey, I took my wife out and she had no idea how to hit a putt. So I said, put the phone down. I said, hey, that's only 50%, right?
Yeah.
So it is kind of a cool visual to visualize that, you know, I know we did the physics on it. And the first time I pulled it out, I'd have a downhill putt. I'm going, holy, this is only 20%. Like, and then I visualized, like I had a 10-footer. I visualized hitting it 2 feet. And I was like, yeah, that went, got all the way to the hole. That's pretty cool. But yeah, we've got basically the app has everything you need to learn to know to putt well. You know, I've coached on the PGA Tour now for quite a while, and I'm pretty proud of it. I've got a 7-day putting course in the app as well, in the video section. You know, one on your setup, one on your stroke, one on your routine, distance control. Like I'm pretty proud of the putting course, like the actual putting course that's inside the app outside of the green reading. And, you know, a couple of days ago, I had a college coach, you know, send me over a player's stroke. I was like, wow, this kid's got a nice stroke. He's like, well, yeah, you've been doing all the stuff you said in your app. I was like, so, but, yeah, that's kind of what, super excited about it. You know, we've partnered with Callaway on it. Callaway is obviously very vested in having people, you know, improve their golf, and they've been an amazing partner. They were the only company that I approached. They're very good friends of mine. I've always been impressed with basically everything they do. You know, I've used nothing but a Callaway putter for the last 23 years, but it's nice to be able to access their expertise as well.
Right. Yeah, I was interested. That was on my list of things. It says powered by Callaway or Odyssey in this case. But, you know, why does that matter, and how much does that partnership mean to you guys?
They've got a lot of obviously great R&D and wealth of knowledge when it comes to what makes people putt better, right? And what makes people make more putts. And you know, it's just nice it's nice for me to be able to have them on speed dial. So if there's a question that, you know, I need an answer to, you know, I can get that answer right away. And it's been fun to, you know, have them as partners in, you know, coming up with ways to help people, you know, putt even better. So it's been super. It's just nice having an amazing resource like that I can, you know, bounce either ideas from or just get a straight answer.
Well, the interesting thing is that I don't feel like Callaway or Odyssey put their name on just anything. There must be a little bit of validation or a lot of validation on your end for them to be willing to put their name on your product, as well as the amount of tour feedback you're getting, the positivity that comes through. I mean, I went on the success stories portion of your website, and it's just loaded with big names talking very highly about the product. A lot of that has to really feel like you're doing good things. A lot of validation there for you.
Yeah. And and I've done it. I haven't done a great job of getting, you know, average golfers to talk about it. I've kind of, you know, I coach on tour. They're all friends of mine. So they're like, they'll post about it. Right. And, but we did design it for the average player. Right. It just, that so happens that, you know, tour players aren't great at reading greens either. Right. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun teaching it to people. It used to be, I'd have a golf lesson, like a putting lesson. It'd be going great. There'd be about 10 minutes left and the person's putting great. And they're like, hey, what about green reading? And I'd be like, yeah, it's tough. Right.
Yeah.
You know, start talking about, hey, here's how water would, you know, break and stuff like that. And that leads me to kind of to a cool story. So, you know, not to, I guess I started it, so I'm going to bring up other media, but I wrote a nice article, helped write a nice article in Golf Digest about optical illusions as it refers to Augusta National, right? So, you know, I'm pretty proud of that, but there's a lot that goes into green reading. And, you know, we've also heard like, oh, everything breaks towards Race Creek, or, you know, in Vegas, everything breaks towards, you know, the stratosphere. We've heard that. And, you know, I think in Palm Springs, it's everything breaks towards Indio, right? And, you know, so this year in Vegas, I did an experiment. I took a golf ball, held it up, and you know what happened? When I dropped it, it went straight down, right? So gravity is, you know, there's no gravitational anomalies in Vegas or in, you know, in Augusta, Georgia, or anywhere else. So, but there definitely are, you know, optical illusions out there for sure. Right.
Well, I think a lot of people say if you don't know, it breaks towards the water. Like that's always the default, is it breaks toward the water, I assume, because that's the lowest point. But a lot of people forget that these green complexes have been constructed. They're not in the natural landscape. They may not. We've got there's a hole on my home course that it's the seventh hole, and you'd expect to break down toward the creek and you sort of get that visual, but it actually kind of breaks back toward the fairway. And it's fooled people there from what I've watched for 20 years, because they all just assume it's going toward the water.
Yeah. And optical illusions are everywhere. Right. And so I wrote this article in Golf Digest, helped write the article in Golf Digest. And, you know, unfortunately, two of my guys who were playing in the Masters read it, right? And they're like, hey, Ralph, read your article, but now what do I do, right? So I was like, okay. Kind of hoping not to, you know, get in your head about this. But what I told them was, and I'll ask you the same question, name a player over the years who's putted very well at Augusta.
I mean, you default to Tiger, don't you?
Right. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. So Tiger. And do you remember when Tiger would quite often – take his hands and cover up his eyes, mm-hmm. like make a almost like a round, hard for me to describe on audio, but I think
we've more video too, so you're good.
Yeah. So and I feel like what he was doing there, you know, either on purpose or not, was blocking out the optical illusions and the surrounding part out there, and really being able to focus on the area between the ball and the hole.
So effectively creating a tunnel, almost like you're blocking the sun out, but really you're blocking the external things that don't really matter in a putt.
Yeah, correct. Right.
Sure.
The way you put it was better than the way I was trying to meander. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So what we need to do is we need to focus on, you know, the slope of the ground between the ball and the hole. And the golf ball doesn't care where Race Creek is, doesn't care where Indio is. You know, I've had doctors, you know, call me like, Ralph, like your app doesn't include the fact that everything breaks away from the clubhouse in my golf course. Like, gravity is not. And they kind of wanted me to go to their golf course and, like, I guess run a test on gravity there. I'm like, I don't know. Gravity is gravity, right? So it's a constant. And I do think for a lot of people, especially if you're on a hilly golf course, right, being able to go to the low point, you know, maybe make that tunnel vision with your hands over your eyes to block out like that hole that you're talking about, would be a good scenario for that one. And it's, you know, I wouldn't have brought up the subject if both my guys hadn't putted well at Augusta that week.
Because now it's worth telling. Now you're not throwing anyone under the bus. That's beautiful. Well, I'll tell you what, Ralph, it's an incredibly interesting app. I love the idea that people are talking not just about fitting, but also about there is an external force that exists in putting that doesn't exist in a lot of other situations in golf. And the best thing we could do is to learn more about it. And reading break, I think, is one of the most underthought conversations in the short game.
Dan, couldn't agree more.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey gang, we're going to get really nerdy in today's episode of Shaft University, and we're going to talk about CPMs and how they relate to flex. CPM stands for cycles per minute. What that means is we're measuring the first mode of natural frequency of a shaft in a cantilever position. What does all that mean? Frankly, I barely even remember. What it really means is we're measuring the frequency of a golf shaft in one particular plane. And really, because of the way we're clamping that shaft, we're only measuring probably the first 8 to 14 inches, depending on the shaft profile, of how stiff that shaft is. So there is no direct correlation between CPM and flex. What may be a stiff flex for one company is a regular flex for another if they're just measuring CPM, or even with our own lines. We don't always have the same exact CPM for a stiff flex in one line versus another, because there's so much more to a golf shaft than just the CPM. So where CPM is a great starting place, if you just want to measure the butt stiffness of the shaft right under the grip, it doesn't nearly tell you the whole story. So you really got to dive in and find out more about that shaft besides just the CPM.
Good. Well, hey, good luck out there this year. It seems like you're having a great time. Bay Hill this week. Who knows where we are next week? I'm incredibly jealous, but I'll look forward to seeing how this changes over the next little bit. And yeah, best of luck to you.
All right, thanks for your time. I would like everybody to make a few more putts.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if you guys are out there playing this weekend, have a great time. Read the green better. Check out Tour Read Golf. It's powered by Odyssey. Ralph seems like he's got a lot of great things going on. And if you don't make putts and you don't do it, it's only your fault. If you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. And yeah, if you are playing with a buddy, tell them they're good. They probably need to hear it. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.